Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with increasing tensions between the White House and the press over the government snooping on the AP and a Fox News reporter, which has prompted the New York Times to editorialize that the Obama administration has moved beyond protecting government secrets to threatening fundamental freedoms of the press to gather news. A former Justice Department legal ethics advisor who now represents whistleblowers, Jesselyn Raddick, joins us. She is the National Security and Human Rights Director at the Government Accountability Project. Then we will speak with Arnold Hamilton, the editor of the Oklahoma Observer, about the hypocrisy of Oklahoma's Senators Imhoff and Coburn, who have consistently opposed federal disaster aid that the state now sorely needs. Following the disastrous destruction of lives and property from tornadoes that killed young children in their unprotected schools, we will discuss the Republican-dominated state government's war on education, where the school budgets have been cut by 30% in the past few years, with the governor proposing teachers arm themselves at their own expense while she cuts their pay. Then finally, Richard Wolff, Emeritus Professor of Economics at the University of Massachusetts and author of Democracy at Work, A Cure for Capitalism, joins us to offer his critique of U.S. and global capitalism. With the rich getting richer and the poor poorer, we will discuss what can be done to revive a democracy captured by plutocrats and corporatists to restore a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Joining us now is Jesselyn Raddick, the Government Accountability Project's National Security and Human Rights Director, where she works with National Security and Intelligence Community whistleblowers, including those from the Defense Department, Homeland Security, NSA, and CIA. She recently represented former NSA official Thomas Drake in the government's unsuccessful prosecution of him under the Espionage Act and is now representing former CIA officer John Kiriakou. She served in the Department of Justice as a legal ethics advisor for 3 years, which led to her becoming a whistleblower in the case of the American Taliban, John Walker Lind, the first high-profile terrorism prosecution following 9/11. The author of Traitor, The Whistleblower and the American Taliban, she has an article at the Daily Kos, Obama's hollow promise that DOJ won't prosecute press. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jesselyn Raddick.
Thank you for having me.
And I guess the White House Press Secretary, Jay Carney, he's having a difficult time, is he not, explaining to the press, who are clearly not happy, that the White House really does defend freedom of the press?
Yeah, that's kind of a tough sell for a number of reasons, not the least of which that is that for the last 3 years, he's been waging an unprecedented crackdown on whistleblowers, charging people under the Espionage Act for allegedly mishandling allegedly classified information. And it's been quite a brutal campaign. Probably the most visible defendant in that is Bradley Manning. Though certainly, Tom Drake's case collapsed in pretty spectacular fashion. And unfortunately, John Kiriakou, who never tortured anyone, ended up being the one to go to jail, even though he blew the whistle on the torture program. So now, I mean, for years, I feel like I've been shouting into the wilderness that journalists really need to worry about this, not only because if whistleblowers are silenced, their sources dry up, but also because of their own interest insofar as I think this is a backdoor way of going after the government, going after journalists. And I think we saw that in full fruition this week.
Well, of course, the government is going after the journalists because they apparently have failed in some way to discipline those within their own ranks not to leak to the press. So I don't understand why it is that the press has to be beaten up on and the First Amendment of the Constitution has to be compromised and violated because the government can't keep its own secrets. Isn't the onus on the government to keep its own secrets?
Well, yes, and in fact, you bring up a good point because, of course, the biggest leaker in the United States of America is the federal government. And the whole back and forth, the whole interaction between the government and the press is all about trading on secrecy and information. information is the coin of the realm. And, of course, the press is always trying to report that and I think has been doing so responsibly. If anything, they've been over-deferential to the White House and the government at large in terms of holding stories or not running them at all if there's objection to it. But going after the press, you know, really crosses the Rubicon in a way that we haven't seen since Richard Nixon's presidency.
Well, you have the paradox of the New York Times defending Fox News, if you will, in today's editorial, where they make it clear that the federal prosecutors asked a federal judge for permission to examine James Rosen, the chief Washington correspondent for Fox News, to examine his personal emails because of a probable cause to believe that Mr. Rosen is an aider and abettor and or co-conspirator in the leak. And apparently their State Department had him monitored and followed. And a part of the charge is that he employed flattery and was playing to Mr. Kim's vanity and ego, Mr. Kim being Stephen Jin-Woo Kim, a State Department security advisor who leaked a story which doesn't sound like it's particularly consequential about North Korea planning to launch a missile in response to being condemned for its nuclear test by the UN Security Council. The New York Times rightly points out the ridiculous nature of that charge of employing flattery, a person in the press flattering a government official. That's what they do, isn't it? I mean, that's the part of the job.
Absolutely. I mean, I know, whenever there's been a government assault on civil rights and civil liberties and First Amendment, it does create strange bedfellows. As happened with the secret surveillance and warrantless wiretapping, you have libertarian Republicans like Rand Paul teaming up with First Amendment icons, Democratic icons, who are all arguing that this is totally inappropriate to do dragnet surveillance on United States citizens. And I think here is another example where it doesn't matter what party you're with, if the government is surveilling journalists, whether you're the New York Times or Fox News, this affects everybody. It's not a partisan issue. And then in terms of the other thing you brought up, in terms of the flattery, I mean, trying to imply that Fox News somehow was an aider or an abettor or co-conspirator for soliciting information criminalizes the entire journalistic reporting practice. I mean, this is part of, the flattery and the asking follow-up questions or asking for documentary proof. This is part of normal journalistic practices. So to try to criminalize that is a complete infringement on the First Amendment, which is our bedrock of the Bill of Rights, which promises freedom of the press as being central to our democracy.
So there is this incredible double standard where 99% of the leaks come from the government through the front door, and those that go through the back door are the ones that now they're going after. So it's confusing for journalists if you can get, you get an important leak from a top official through the front door, and then a week later you find out something through the back door, and you end up being charged. I mean, I think that in many ways our democracy is better served by more disclosure. If you look at what happened to the build-up to the Iraq war and the extraordinary number of government lies that led us into that disastrous war, that still the consequences of which we still are living with and will live with for decades, the problem there is that there wasn't enough government leaks, surely.
Exactly. And I think you're hitting on the distinction between so-called authorized leaks, which is kind of an oxymoron, but that would be front door leaks made by people in the government who are always sourced as anonymous government officials who we can't identify because of an ongoing investigation or because of their position. and unauthorized leaks, or the backdoor leaks, in which information comes out that, you know, heaven forbid it should embarrass the government. But if you expose its illegalities, you're really going to get hammered. And that's a huge problem. I mean, it's total hypocrisy for the White House to be leaking the names of undercover operatives to Hollywood directors for the making of Zero Dark 30, and then trying to put my client in jail for revealing, or actually confirming, the name of an undercover operative to a journalist because this undercover operative was involved in the torture program. There's a difference there, and I think most people would be able to see there are good leaks and bad leaks. I mean, that's what defines whistleblowing versus leaking.
Sure. Well, in the case of the CIA officer who provided information to the filmmakers for Zero Dark 30, I think more, I don't know whether her name was ever released, but certainly it was her version of history that was released. And what wasn't released was the fact that this same CIA officer was the one who apparently prevented the FBI from finding out about the two Al-Qaeda operatives in San Diego who later flew the planes into the buildings. So that person was not without sin, and it would have been a more interesting movie if the whole if the full truth about who it was. So when you leak stuff too selectively, you get a very selective version of history. That's the problem with leaks, surely.
Well, I wouldn't even call it history at that point. I would call it propaganda. When you're only getting one side, and when the other side tries to come out, and you basically punish the other side by, you know, revoking their security clearance, by getting them fired, by putting them under criminal investigation, those are really heavy-handed, draconian tactics, more appropriate to a dictatorship than a democracy. So I think you really do a disservice to the country, and it becomes agitprop, you know, to have Zero Dark 30 kind of normalizing torture, while the people who did speak out against it, you know, none of the people who tortured, none of the people who wrote the memos justifying it, none of the people who destroyed the videotapes, and none of the people who actually carried it out, not a single one has been held accountable. But the guy who blew the whistle on it, John Kiriakou, is now in jail for 2.5 years away from his wife and 5 kids. Because he never tortured anybody. In fact, I think if John had actually tortured someone, I'm confident he would not be in jail today.
Well, Justin Raddick, what do you know about this AP case? Because my understanding is that the AP had the story from the leaker in the government, and then they told the White House, or the White House found out they had the secret, so they were asked to hold off for a while before they published it, which they did. And then they went ahead and published it, and now they're crying wolf. And I understand that it's very possible that that damage was done, because I believe that the British MI6 had recruited an Al-Qaeda double agent, which is apparently a very difficult thing to do, and that this person was exposed by this leak, and the Brits apparently are furious with the CIA, and I guess with the White House as well. So what do you know about the timeline there? Because that's obviously what's critical.
Well, my understanding of the timeline is that the AP was writing a story on this, and they let the White House know. The White House requested that they hold the story, which the AP did, which is valiant of them. They don't have to do that, but they did. Like I said, newspapers have been quite deferential to the government in that regard. And then the government gave them the green light about a week later, saying, there's no more danger, no one's in danger, but hold off until we make our announcement. You know, we want to get the big splash from that. But the AP was like, look, whatever. They made their own independent editorial decision to go ahead and publish. 24 hours later, the White House made an announcement, the government did, that in sum and substance said very much what the AP story did. But now the White House, Eric Holder, Justice Department in particular, is saying this is one of the biggest leaks he's ever seen in his career, definitely among the top two or three, and that it severely damaged national security, which is belied by the fact that the information was in the White House announcement, number one, the very next day, and number two, Brennan, who now heads the CIA, gave a pitch about it too, saying that no lives were in danger, there was no harm caused by this, and no one's life was ever at stake. And so now, the White House really has egg on its face because it's talking out of both sides of its mouth and has actually gotten caught, rather than, getting to bang the bully pulpit like they usually do with their usual fear-mongering. So I think the AP behaved correctly here. I think also under the guidelines that do exist, that the Justice Department does have for itself, that it is supposed to be a very, very rare occurrence upon which you would subpoena a journalist. That is an unholy thing to do. And therefore, they have their own guidelines, the government does, that says they will only subpoena a journalist as a last resort, and that subpoena must be limited in scope and duration and subject matter. And none of those things were true here. I mean, we know that this subpoena was for 2 months' worth of material and hooked into 20 different AP lines affecting up to 100 different journalists. So that is hardly tailored, carefully tailored to the specifics of whatever they were trying to prevent. And again, it's no big surprise that this came up as part of a leak investigation. Because again, as I keep saying, and I'm feeling like a broken record here, but these leak investigations are really a way of chilling free speech and keeping people silent.
Well, Jessalyn Radek, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
You're quite welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Again, I've been speaking with Jessalyn Radek, who is a Government Accountability Project's National Security and Human Rights Director, where she works with national security and intelligence community whistleblowers, including those from the Defense Department, Homeland Security, NSA, and CIA. She recently represented former NSA official Thomas Drake in the government's unsuccessful prosecution of him under the Espionage Act and is now representing former CIA officer John Kiriakou. She served in the Justice Department as a legal ethics advisor for 3 years, which led her to becoming a whistleblower in the case of the American Taliban, John Walker Lind, the first high-profile terrorism prosecution following 9/11. The author of Traitor, The Whistleblower and the American Taliban, she has an article at the Daily Kos, Obama's Hollow Promise That DOJ Won't Prosecute Press. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking with the editor of the Oklahoma Observer about the hypocrisy of the two senators who represent this staunchly Republican state.
I'm looking for a sign. I'm looking for the treason that I knew in '65. Beware the Sabbath.